Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
G'day, you legends. Welcome to Supercharge Mojo. I'm Daniel Thomas, and as always, I can't thank you enough for your ongoing support. This is my conversation with Ashton Rodenheiser. Ashton is a creative entrepreneur, and she's also a graphic recorder. She essentially spreads the concept of using drawing and sketching as a thinking tool. We had an awesome chat. Enjoy it. Let's go.
What led you to narrow your focus to sketching?
Yeah, so I started my journey as a facilitator. So I really fell in love with group process and how people can kind of come to their own wisdom if it's, you know, if they get asked the right questions and they have a safe space to do so. So I really had honed in on my listening and my thinking skills and feeding back in words. And then when I learned about this type of work, it really was this beautiful coming together of, like, I think my secret dream of being an artist and this facilitation world and helping people communicate their ideas. So I could do that in pictures and drawings instead of words. So, and then I just started to experience the power of it. And I was like, okay, I'm going to like go all in. And that was, I started my journey 10 years ago. So I've been doing it for quite a while now. Yeah.
Have you always been like a visual person?
Yeah, I've always been, I call myself a dabbler. So I have tried out many different art mediums, if name it, and I've probably tried it, even very obscure ones. And I just like playing around with different ones, but I didn't actually draw a whole lot until I got into this work, actually. And I'm kind of an impatient person. So the idea of sketching something live and you have to create a graphic in like a half an hour actually kind of worked out really well for me because I don't have the patience to sit down and spend weeks on like one painting. Like that sounds awful to me. So I like the immediacy and the way that you can create an illustration or a visual representation of that information in a short amount of time. I actually love the time constraint where I think the time constraint stresses people out. I actually really like it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm a filmmaker and I find the same thing with constraints. It makes you have to find kind of immediate solutions with what you have as opposed to like having this endless kind of thing. But, it's interesting in architecture from experience, often like when we were doing presentations and things, we put a heck of a lot of work into like pretty sleek presentations and conceptual stuff of buildings. But often only a few sort of were kind of, call it capable, a few architects I knew, but often just a very minimal hand sketch communicated something much more than,
right.
than a concept that had been worked on for weeks. And I kind of put it down to, like, when things were too perhaps overcomplicated or computer generated, like clients who weren't necessarily familiar would get kind of overwhelmed. And when they were just shown a really simple sketch that communicated an idea, and as you say, perhaps took half an hour or less, sometimes that would communicate to
them. Or even 2 minutes.
Yeah. Or even 2 minutes. Sometimes that would really communicate what was needed. And I was always really impressed by that, because I was like, well, maybe you don't need to spend weeks and weeks to communicate something in that way.
Yeah. Yeah, you definitely really have starting to speak to the value of it, right? And there's a difference between showing someone a presentation or a workflow or what have you in a very curated, clean design, and sitting down with somebody for 2 minutes with a napkin and a pen and just capturing, right? And saying, like, okay, this is what we're going to do. And there's a circle and there's a line. And it is usually extremely crude drawing. But sometimes those can be the most effective. Yeah.
All the best ideas come off napkins, right?
Exactly. Yeah. There's a guy named Dan Rome, and he has a book called Back to the Napkin, and it's all about visualizing your ideas. And yeah. So yeah, it's like the whole thing, the whole napkin drawing thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I was always told I could draw, but I think I didn't really see myself as an awesome drawer, but I think it was because I was so meticulous. Like, I just used to take my times. But for people who think they can't draw, which I think is pretty common.
Yeah, it is.
What do you recommend?
Yeah, well, I think from a philosophy standpoint, we need to redefine what drawing is. So drawing is not necessarily, doesn't have to be an art form to be appreciated. You know, yes, you can go to an art gallery and see a drawing and be like, that's a nice drawing, or resonate with it in some way, reflect on it in some way. But for me, drawing is a process to help you engage, learn, break down complexity, gain clarity, so on and so on. It's just the art and the making of putting your pen to a paper and making a mark. It's to help you think. It's like a thinking tool rather than a place where you're looking to create a nice drawing, right? So I wrote a book called The Beginner's Guide to Sketchnoting, and sketchnoting takes this concept that I use as a professional live illustrator and just does it more on a smaller scale. So the same skill set, you're just listening for yourself instead of groups of people. And when I go through the process of teaching people how to sketchnote, when I was working through writing the book, at its core, like, the simple drawing elements can be taught in like 15 minutes or less, to be honest with you. And it's not rocket science. The first drawing element that I teach in the book, after talking about some lettering things, is a line. Right? So you can draw a line. Everybody can draw a line. It might not be straight line, and that's okay. It doesn't have to be straight line. It could be a wiggly line. It could be a zigzag line, you know, but how you use something as simple as just drawing a line can help you connect information on a page, can help show separation, show a flow of information on a page, right? So one is the philosophy of drawing can be your greatest thinking tool if you allow it. And two, we're not talking about drawing in the traditional sense of an illustration drawing. We're talking about making marks. And those are simple things like a line and an arrow and a square. Stick people are fine. You know, something only has to be 30%. It represents 30% of reality in order for you to understand what it is, right? So you don't have, we're not looking to draw, you know, a portrait and a full on person. Like, I can't draw like realistic looking people, black drastic person. You know, you can upgrade that to the star, a star person, which we work through in the book, but you know, it does not have to be drawing in the traditional sense. So I believe everybody can draw if you can write letters, then you can draw, because that's all. Letters are just drawings in disguise, right? They're just marks. They're like a combination of lines and curvy lines and wiggly lines and straight lines, right? So you can draw. If you can write letters, you can draw.
Yeah, I was in bands a lot, and I remember I'll get to my point eventually, but I was in bands and when I was playing on a stage, it was funny how often people in the crowd would want to give you their opinion afterwards on how to play in a band, or how to be a front person, or how to play drums, or what you should do. And I just remember being in the UK, and a guy gave me a lecture for probably about half an hour about everything, how you should. And I literally said to him, I remember saying to him, I was like, dude, are you willing to draw a picture and stick it up in the town square? And he was like, no, I wouldn't do that. Why would I do that? And I'm like, well, you're kind of willing to tell me how to, you know, how about everything that a band should do, but the act of like putting something out there publicly,
right,
it'd be quite scary. And when he said, no, I would never draw to do that, what sounds like a simple act of drawing a picture and sticking it up in the town square, I was just, from what you were saying, it was making me think of like the self-critique. And I think it's perhaps the self-critique that can even stop someone, the self-critiquing that can even stop someone putting that pen to paper.
Yeah. It's the biggest hurdle that I have to help people get through, is drawing their first sketch note, or their first, like listening to their first TED talk and trying to draw it out. That is like, once you get that first one done, like it's all uphill from here, right? Because, or downhill, is it uphill or downhill? Whatever the saying.
That's all smooth sailing.
It's all smooth sailing. There you go. We'll go to a different one. Yeah. So yeah. And I put together last year this like little 15-minute video, like draw your first sketch note. It's like 15 minutes and you just literally, you're just copying me. But you're creating your first one, and that's okay that you copied me, learned about sketchnoting, and you created your first one, because it is one of the hardest things to do, is just doing the first one. And you know, when I took some training like 10 years ago, when I was first introduced into this work, I ran into a few of those people over the years who were in that first workshop, and they never did anything with it. And that was the biggest thing that they all told me. They're like, they were asking me like, how did you manage to like do it? And I'm like, I literally just put paper on a wall and drew a picture in front of people. Like, that's all I did. The first time is terrifying. The second time was less terrifying, and so on and so on and so on. Now, like I sometimes, more so before the pandemic, would find myself in situations where I'm on this big stage with like a famous speaker in front of thousands of people. And it's like, yeah, it's scary, but it's not as scary as it could be, because you're just like acclimated to it. You know, like you're just like, I'm just doing my thing. Like, you lean on your experience. You're like, do some positive self-talk to yourself. Like, okay, you've done this before, you can do it again. It doesn't matter how famous this person is, right? But just the fact of starting, it can be like the toughest place for people, for sure.
So do you actually have an exercise where you get people to draw out like a TED talk?
Yeah, well, I do some in my community, but the one that I do have is just like, I'm teaching people about sketchnoting while sketchnoting, and they can follow along and draw it with me. That's the one that I do have. But yeah, like there's so many different ways and use cases for sketchnoting for personal. So a lot of folks come to me when they want to learn how to incorporate it into their work. So like maybe they're a team lead, or they lead a bunch of meetings and things like that, and they want to be able to help in those meetings, help visualize some of those ideas. And then some folks will come to me because they're more of a hobbyist and they want to learn it as just like a fun skill set that they can incorporate into their life. So they, when they listen to podcasts or webinars or what have you, they can do this and help them remember. And then some folks will come to me as students. So they're high school or college, or they're a student in some way, and they want to be able to help remember that information. Through the sketching process. And then I also have teachers who want to educate students in classrooms as well, as like another tool in their toolbox to be able to capture notes in this way.
Now that I think of it, when I was taking notes in lectures, I never retained anything from my handwritten notes.
Right on.
Is that a and even though I was in, like, I was back in a design course, I was trying to write notes, and I mean, I don't remember them being of any use whatsoever. So to have a process that that you're talking about could be way more effective by the sound of it.
Yeah, of course I'm biased, but of course, yeah. But yeah, you know, so the example that I like to give to people is, imagine you are you have two students side by side, and your teacher of the classroom could be like any age, and you look over the shoulders of both of those students. One of them has a very traditional note-taking, right? It's just lined paper with words, words, words all down the page. You have one student capturing notes in this way. The other student is drawing them out. Maybe they don't have as much information, but they've got little lines, got little people, they've got little highlights, they've got, you know, information along the page. Maybe they wrote or drew things larger than others to kind of show hierarchy, like they've got it drawn out in this like sketch note style. So as a teacher, when you peer over the shoulders of those two students, which student are you going to see the learning and the understanding and have opportunity to have a deeper conversation about what they just learned, right? Where the traditional note taking, which is like a whole bunch of words, you have no idea what they actually understood and what they actually learned, if anything. But the sketch note, you can get a clear sense of very quickly being able to look and glance over and see, did they get those main points? Are they missing something? Do they need to build a different connection to something else? You know, like, you know, just from that example, you can kind of see where the learning comes into it. So we're not sketchnoting to like necessarily, the goal isn't necessarily to like create something that looks pretty. I do teach aesthetics because people do want their sketch note to look nice, which I appreciate. But at the end of the day, it's like the process and the learning and that engagement. And what's different in sketchnoting is, because you're thinking and trying to make sense of what you're listening to in the moment, the learning is happening in the moment. Whereas I find more traditional note-taking, you're just like, frantic and trying to capture as much as you can to then do the learning later. And most people don't go back and do that learning later, right? Like when I was in school, I just was very traditional note-taking because I didn't know any other way. And how I studied was, I basically would just copy those pages over and over and over again because I didn't know how else to digest that information. Whereas in sketchnoting, you're digesting and trying to make meaning in the moment. So yes, you might be capturing less information, but you're deepening your understanding of that information. So at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if you like capture all the details of something, you have to trust that your brain's also going to remember things beyond the page too, and how you build those connections. And it allows an opportunity for you to fill in the gaps. Like, I know I missed something. What was it? Let's go ask the teacher. Let's go ask somebody. Right. Whereas like, you don't know what those gaps are if you just like have traditional note taking of just words and words and words on a page.
It's like constructive doodling.
Yeah. Well, the way I like to describe it is like, doodling is awesome, and doodling itself can help you retain up to 29% more information. Right. Just doodling, not talking about sketchnoting, just doodling. Mm. Right. So the way I see it, doodling is just like in sketchnoting, there's just the step up. You take your doodles that you're probably drawing anyways, maybe, and making them work for you, making them purposeful. Right. So if you're going to draw a little like light bulb or like little funny little things, like draw them while also capturing your notes, like make it all integrated.
I think the doodling is perhaps telling you something as well. Like I've been, you know, I think we've all been in boring meetings and you just end up like sketching something like, you know, I've ended up drawing like labyrinths, mazes and things. But I think it's like, well, what's that? What's that saying? It's probably just saying I'm bored, right? But it's as you said, it's like a present communication that's coming through you. If you to when you're absorbing that information.
Yeah, when you're doodling, it's not that you're not paying attention anymore. It's not that you're tuning out. And I think that's why that stat exists, because you are still listening. You just need, some folks need to have that tactile space. And if they're not, you know, like in a carpentry class, like making something and learning while they're making something, a lot of folks need to have that movement while they're learning, right? So it allows you to focus. It's doing what most think is the opposite. Most people think, oh, you're doodling because you are not paying attention, when it's actually trying to help you stay focused. So Sunny Brown, she has a book called The Doodle Revolution, and she has a 7-minute TED Talk from like 13 years ago. And I still love this little 7-minute video. And it talks about the power of doodling. And yeah, she talks about how it is doing the opposite of what you think, right? It's helping you stay focused. Instead of, you know, because everyone's going to be distracted all of the time about everything. Like, that's just human behavior, and our nature is to be distracted if we're not completely immersed in something. And what I say to clients sometimes when they ask me that question about distraction is, well, they're going to be distracted anyways. Do you want them to also stay focused? Right? So if they can see me drawing.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You know, like at a conference, let's say, they're still paying attention. Because they're looking at, like, they're hearing the speaker say something and they're looking at me draw a picture, or they're watching me write out the words of what the speaker just said. So it's not distracting. The only thing that would be sometimes I have to fight against, which is kind of a funny thing, is like the ego of the speaker, maybe. It's like, no, the speaker wants them to look at their face, which I'm like, do you really care about that? Like, is that really the most important thing for these people to learn? It's like, they have to look at your face or look at your slides, which are probably not that great, because most of slides I see are not great. And I've done 2,500 presentations at this point. Like, I captured 2,500. Most of them are crap. So most of them are not good. So, you know, do you want them looking at your crappy presentation, or do you want them to like deepen their understanding by looking at me drawing it out? Right. And I know I'm being kind of cheeky about it, but you know, that's been my experience.
I'm sure there's many students around the world who still cop it because they're like doodling and the teacher, you know, the teacher cracks it at them, but when actually they're probably just trying to make that connection. So it should be encouraged.
Yeah. I had a friend who was like really reprimanded in a business setting in front of everybody about doodling, but it was the facilitator, thankfully, that had come to their side and was like, no, let him doodle. This is why. Right. So we need just to have a little bit more education around those types of things. And, you know, the thing I talk a lot about recently with clients when they're hiring me to do this is the neurodiversity perspective, because I feel like folks are becoming a bit more understanding and educating themselves on folks that learn differently. And someone who may not be able to sit through physically or mentally like 10 presentations in a day, like whether you're neurodiverse or not, it's like a hard ask, right? Yeah. So if people can engage with it in the moment by watching me, or if they can't be there, they're not going to miss out on the information, because they can see very quickly by looking at my illustration what they missed. And I think the immediacy of it is really important, because even if you are recording it, or even if you are providing the slides after, that's a big ask. You're basically asking people to give up a whole other day or two of their lives to now watch these presentations and trying to go through the slide deck and try to make meaning of it. And if you do your slide deck correctly, it shouldn't tell you everything. Like, that's why you need to have a combination of the slide deck and the person speaking about it, because the slide deck shouldn't just be like slides full of words and no context. That doesn't make any sense, right? So a slide deck should complement what it is that happened, what was said, and the energy around it, and maybe my graphic. It should complement it all, but it shouldn't be a complete replacement for. So expecting people to go back and look at a slide deck to try to get that information, I don't think is appropriate. And people learn in different ways, right? Technically, learning styles have been debunked by scientists. Technically, I don't really know all the details around it, but people still resonate by, you know, when I was in person a lot before the pandemic, that's the number one comment people would say. They would come up to me and say, oh, I'm a visual learner. This resonates with me, right? So, you know, like I said, whether you're neurodiverse or not, a lot of people consider themselves or consider visual learning as one of their preferred learning styles for sure.
So do you deal with quite a broad spectrum of business types? And do you find it doesn't matter how different the business, the same things apply?
Yeah. So that's kind of the fun thing about what I do when I'm doing this professionally is I don't really have a specific industry that I work in. I do a lot in technology and I do a lot in cybersecurity. I kind of fell into it when I was building my business and they have kind of carried me through the pandemic and everything. Luckily, like I love all my tech people. So that does make up a huge percentage of my business, but I'm not limited to any particular industry. Like I have two proposals out right now, one for a food security conference. And another one is like an energy conference, right? So it's not like I'm not really limited to any particular industry, which is really fun because I get to go into these settings and learn about a lot of different things. And funny enough, a lot of the conversations are the same, whether you're like a Fortune 500 company or a small nonprofit. Honestly, a lot of the conversations are similar. And those conversations are, you know, how do we move forward? How do we grow? How do we work together? It's a lot of it is a similar kind of conversation.
It must be so.
I've kind of joked. I'm like, why can't people just get along? They wouldn't need me. They wouldn't need me if the people can just figure out how to get along.
Wow. Companies and working environments are a whole other thing. And I think people need to be heard. And I've been in a few businesses where I've seen kind of toxic cultures develop and stuff. And that's a whole thing of its own. But it must be really cool, as you say, to dive into these different areas and try and learn it pretty quickly, I imagine.
Yeah, and like hear their, you know, specific issues they're working through and what their challenges are. And yeah, like it is like a kind of pull behind the curtain. And then I become like very opinionated about certain issues then once I start, like, because you can read an article or watch a news story about an issue, but you're only like scratching the surface. But when I get to sit in on two full days of people talking about this one issue and people who are on the ground working in this one issue, you get educated. Whoa. You know, this is lived experience you're listening to. Like this, these are the people that are dealing with this issue, right? Like I get to become very opinionated about a lot of different things and end up like educating my family about certain issues around things. Cause I'm like, you know, I still don't know everything, but I got to sit in two full days, like 16 hours of listening to people with lived experience. Like it does definitely put a different perspective on different issues in your community when you get to be completely immersed in it. And it's just such an honor, to be honest with you. Like I really have to hold myself, like I want to make sure I'm extremely respectful in some of those situations because like it is people's experience. And sometimes it's like not a fun conversation to be in. Like there's tension, there's people not happy, you know, and it's my job to make sure that those voices are valued and heard and you know, that people feel leave that meeting feeling heard and valued, and that it was a productive time for them to be there, and that hopefully they can use this illustration to continue the conversation. It should be a way to help people engage in the moment, but it shouldn't end there. It should be a legacy piece, an accountability piece, where people can then reflect on this illustration and be like, hey, like, this is what we talked about. This is it. This is how we said we were going to move forward. I refuse to, like, when I do those types of situations, I refuse to do reports. My co-facilitators I typically work with refuse to do reports, because there's a reason why they invited me to be there. And I'm there to help visualize this conversation. What is going to go in a report that is not represented on the visual, right? Like, you just want me to, like, take the visual and basically write it out in a report. Mm. And you know what's going to happen to that report? You're going to put that report in a drawer and you're never going to look at it again. Whereas you can print the graphic, you can hang it on your wall, you can do whatever you want with it, right? As that accountability piece. And it's pretty to look at. It's kind of nice, right? You're like, look at us, look at our vision. That's so exciting, right? So yeah, thank you for letting me, thank you for coming to my TED Talk about that topic.
Are you drawing live, or do you take it away and come up with the illustration and then present it? Or are you drawing in the moment of those conversations?
Yeah, I would say 99% of the time it's live. Mm. And it's important for that to be the case, because either it's a conference presentation or the kind of a situation I was just describing. It's important for people to see in the moment what is happening and then deepen their learning in the moment and feeling heard and valued in the moment. There's not as much value in those types of settings where creating it afterwards is going to be valuable. I certainly work with a lot of conferences where either I couldn't be there live or something, for some reason, I couldn't do it live. And they would send me recordings before sometimes or after a presentation, and I would create a visual. And I think there's still a lot of impact from a conference setting when it comes to, like, someone presenting information. You can use it, you know, as a nice follow-up tool in some marketing and help people deepen their learning by looking at it after, and even though they missed out the live element. But when you have facilitated type discussions where there's many people in the room having a conversation, it's pretty darn important for me to be there live, whether it's virtually or in person, right? So sometimes if I do it virtually, they'll pull my screen and show it in a room if it's like a hybrid type thing. But still there's this element of me being live, whether I'm physically there or not, to make sure that I'm capturing the moments that happened in the moment. Right.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's I just thought of it. One of my it was quite a proud moment. Cause my son, when he was small, he was trying to get into a school, and they were doing an exercise with him. And they had a box on the application thing, and they said, draw yourself. Mm. And he drew a very happy little boy, like a stick figure of himself, but like arms up, smiling, arms in the air, smiling. And I looked at the drawing, and I was like, if that's how he depicts himself, I'm doing a good job so far, I think, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And I got a bit frustrated, because I don't think the people who were doing that process really saw what I was seeing. They were focused on a whole number of other things. But to me, out of that whole meeting, that drawing that he did just stood out to me.
I love that. That's awesome. Yeah. Like it. Yeah. We tend to remember these stories, right? Even things that happened years ago, like yours, for example, of something was memorable because it was drawn out in front of us, right? We got to see that unfold. Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah. It's a tradition on the show to have guests offer listeners some sort of challenge, and it's pretty clear what this challenge might be, but it could be anything, right? Really, not to put you on the spot, but what springs to mind, I guess, particularly perhaps for somebody who thinks they're not a good drawer, or do you have any suggestions?
Yeah, I definitely feel like I could do so many different things here now. But if I, honestly, let's like make this low barrier as possible. Just do something today. Just take literally 5 seconds and pick up a pen and a scrap piece of paper or notes that you took earlier in the week or what have you, and just do a little doodle on it. Or next time you find yourself in a meeting in the next week, you know, do a little doodle and just see how that feels for you. Yeah, let's make it easy. Let's start there. Just the experiencing the power of a doodle. Just take 5 seconds and make a mark on a piece of paper and see how that feels.
That's an awesome challenge because it's a baby step, and often things are often things could be a bit overwhelming when it's like, oh, go to the gym 10 times or something, but no, it's just like do one doodle.
Let's do something that's going to take 5 seconds, and then maybe you'll get excited about it and want to do more.
I think one of the only things a lot came out of my architecture experience, but one thing is definitely the way I draw trees. And I'm going to draw one now and show you and see what you think.
Yay, that is so exciting. I have so many different little ways that I draw trees, but...
I'll try and get on the camera.
Oh, fun. I love that. Yeah, for the audience, it's like this beautiful, like big S squiggles with a line. I love that. That's
beautiful fun. Is a strong word, but I like the...
Honestly, I just geek out every time someone puts pen to paper. I totally geek out, and like they are like, "It's awful." And I'm like, "No, it's amazing." And I honestly, I am as excited. I think they think I'm like over the top, but I know I am actually extremely excited every time I see someone trying to make a mark on a piece of paper. Just like,
well, it's obviously a genuine passion for you, and that comes across. You know that. Obviously comes across through your work. And I think people have a radar when, especially, you know, when you're advising businesses, I think they have a pretty strong radar if you're not like into what you're doing. So it's awesome that you give that encouragement. That. Yeah.
Yeah. I appreciate that. That's so kind of you to say.
Yeah. Cool. Where can people find you?
Yeah, there's sort of kind of two worlds. There's my professional illustration, the graphic recording. So if you're interested in, you got a conference coming up or a business meeting and you want to have a chat about what it would look like for me to come in and support that in person or virtually, you can find me at mindseyecreative.ca. All things Mind's Eye Creative is me. And if you're like, this sounds really interesting and I might like to learn how to do this skill for myself, either as a hobby or if you're a teacher or student, or you want to use it in business in some way, even if you're not even sure how you're going to use it, but you're curious about learning it, you can head over to sketchnote.school. I have a free weekly newsletter that goes out on Saturday, Sketchnote Saturday, with a sketchnoting tip and information about how you can grab my book is there, The Beginner's Guide to Sketchnoting, and learn about my online community where I'm in there helping people every day on their sketchnoting skills. And we've got guest workshops and all super fun stuff that's happening in there. All things. Yeah. If you really want to like dive into learning the skill, that's where everything is. If you want to work with me in that way, you can join the community in there.
Cool. Well, it's been awesome to chat to you. You've inspired me to actually really like try and use it as a tool. Like I haven't, yeah, I mean, I do use it. I use sketching as a tool all the time in storyboarding and stuff like that. But I mean, in something where I'm actually trying to retain information.
Yeah.
I really haven't explored that too much. So,
Give it a go and let me know how it goes. I'm curious.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, thank you for your time.
You're no problem at all. I had such a great chat.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips
tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.